Yeah, this is, they say, the tax laws are so complicated, you don't need to read them. Oh, I just call H&R Block. You need to get over there and talk to H&R Block, or get you a tax accountant, get you a CPA, because hey, the tax laws are just too complicated for the human being mind.
Well, if you're filing a return, you're going to want the benefits and deductions and credits in the code. That's where you can get lost.
That is totally
But if you're
true.
looking for the simple, something's far simpler, well, who? To me, that's an easier matter to deal with.
Especially if it's not you.
Yeah, no question
Well,
about it.
people have got to understand that they got to reach a conclusion by doing some basic study, and it's all available. There's a lot of websites, and I've got a lot of information on my website. It just you got to devote a little bit of time to studying it and comprehending it. Once you comprehend it, boom, it comes through.
So,
And then the
Gary and
next thing.
Larry, you want to take a little time here? I think it's appropriate this time to explain to the folks why there are differences, such as in individuals, why there's a difference between an individual, a person, a citizen, and how that serves to add to the great confusion when you're sitting there and reading the Internal Revenue Code.
That is really a good point, Sean, because I've worked with Larry on a number of cases, and very often the prosecutor gets up and he approaches the victim, I mean the defendant, and says, "You're an individual, aren't you?" And they kind of have to look this way and that way, and says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, it says the code imposes a tax on the income of every individual who's a citizen or resident of the United States, and to the extent provided in section 871B and 877B, the income of a non-resident alien individual." So you have an individual who's a citizen, you have an
Well,
individual
hey,
who.
Gary, you're quoting a regulation. Let's back up to the statute.
Well, I just didn't want to run too far off the page, but yeah, I mean, this is the regulation, but the statute just simply talks about head of household. It doesn't mention citizen one time in section one. In fact, you don't even find the word treasury secretary at section one. But the section one is the head of household, dependents. But there, there's the code, and I don't want to give anybody the impression or the belief that false, nothing having to do. There's arguments going on. They've been going on for years, about the taxes imposed on the income of individuals, tax on individual. And Larry has done research that goes all the way back to the very first income tax in 1862, going all the way forward to 1916 when the 1913 Tariff Act was repealed. And that is the first place in law, tax law, where the phrase tax on individual even appears.
Hey, so Larry, is that's on your that's on Dixieland Law, isn't it? You've got that research already posted.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's
There.
good to have.
Yeah. And so that whole string of words that we use every single day is being squeezed into one specific little definition, and an individual is a foreigner. A citizen is a citizen,
Or a U.S. person.
or a U.S. person. Well, a U.S. person is means it includes a citizen.
And a
Of the
resident.
United, a resident, citizen or resident of the United States. Larry keeps overlooking the fact that this is the LSU version of the Internal Revenue Code.
So there's a lot of knowledge sitting in on this I guess we call it a teleconference. What I'm thinking about here is, how does this, how does all this knowledge get put to beneficial use for the Republic and the public before we all croak? I'm 62, and I spent like almost 6 months in the hospital last year. So those kinds of questions occur to me, and I kind of had an idea. with a situation that's sort of going on with me. And so what I'm thinking is that each one of these, like Dixieland Law Journal, might already be a framework, if you will, for a way to make it much easier for people to actually do battle with the IRS. My friend, my good friend Joe Bannister, he showed me a documentary last night called "Wolves in Sheep's Clothing," and I really recommend this documentary. It looked like it was twice as long as it really was. Apparently, the recording was double, but it's on YouTube under that name. But it's mostly about Saul Alinsky, and both Joe and I were shocked at Saul Alinsky's, not his tactics, but his lack of morals, not understanding that when the end justifies the means and any means are employed, then the end can only be quite negative.
Well, Peter, you're talking about Democrats.
Well, yeah. But what I was suggesting is it gave me an idea how to employ some of those tactics, but in a moral and ethical way, and use that to change or perhaps slightly even alter the paradigm with how the IRS is routinely, stealing from the American people. And they do it willingly, we know, because they're ignorant. And we know the scriptures, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. But so my question is, as warriors in both the spiritual and the material realm for truth and justice and law, how then do we take these things that we learned and develop a power base around that without resorting to the tactics of our adversary?
Well, Peter, that's a very interesting question. It's probably the most important question is, what do we do? You know, I have seen, I've got a lot of experience. I've learned that what a lot of people want to do is, wow, I don't have to pay taxes. And they'll learn a little bit. And then 99% of them are not going to do anything to help in the overall battle.
Right. However,
they're going to climb up on that Patriot bandwagon and ride along, while they've learned that they don't have to, they'll reach this conclusion. This is their own personal belief. Too many of them can't explain it.
Okay. Well, this is what I'm thinking, Larry.
But decades later, that's an impossibility.
Okay, but right on that subject, I mean, you're really actually hitting the core issue. And I think what's happened is heretofore, what we have done is tried to dissuade people from walking into the meat grinder, so to speak. And that's what you just described. People say, oh, I don't have to pay tax. And then they jump off a cliff or whatever it is they do, tax-wise. However, what I'm suggesting is this. See, what Saul Alinsky did, and if you think about what's going on at the border, and you think about what the Democrats are doing, they're achieving their results entirely through lies. They're lying. And they have an audience that is believing their lies. What I'm suggesting is this. We have the truth. We don't have to tell lies. We can tell the truth. All we have to do is be really aggressive about getting it out there and encouraging people to jump off the cliff, take a stand, clog the system.
Well, Peter, there's a need.
Fill the meat grinder.
There's a need for the rank and file. But let's go back and take a look at the civil rights movement. They had the rank and file. They had a lot of people that were up in arms. However, there were a lot of important battles being carried out outside of the parades and protests.
Agreed.
And, that's one of the things that has to happen in the movement. You have in this movement, there's been, in the past, there's just been tons and tons and tons of gurus running around, and they have been selling some type of a program. You can remember Sean, Phil Marsh.
Oh, yeah.
Phil Marsh was, having to, he was living in a trailer and raiding the apple orchard next door to eat, to get food for him. And that would be about 1989. Then he wrote a book, and 3 years later, when he gets promoting, he's rolling around and he's got this $1,500 program he's selling to everybody. And He's selling franchises to his organization for $10,000. You know, now he's living in a $2 million mansion in someplace in the mountains in Colorado.
So, hey, here's an idea. I just had I think it might even be an inspired idea, but maybe not. But as you were speaking, this came to me. What if every time, like, what if we as a group, and maybe get other people enlisted, we just scour the internet for these gurus that are offering these programs, right? And then what we do is we take their program and we set up our own. It's exactly like it, maybe even with a name that's like one letter off. And we beat them at marketing and get people to sign up for our program. And then when it comes, time to sign on the bottom line for their $1,500 or $3,500 or $10,000 or whatever it is, we say, actually, all it is a $5 a month subscription to Dixieland Law Journal or whatever, and we will give you all the packages and everything that that asshole promised you. And we just beat them at their own game. And at the same time, by using the same tactics, we're going to attract all of their followers and people will become aware of the truth.
Well, babe, here right now, the days of those guys, like the Phil Marshes and the Lynn Merediths and the Thurston Bells and others like them, you know, they're no longer around.
Yeah, they're in jail now, but we aren't.
That is true. And I think that the movement's got to be rebuilt, ground up, in a far better fashion.
Well, John Cotmere had a good idea with Save a Patriot until he got enjoined. Yes, thank you. And I was really sorry to see him pass. I mean, there's a funeral I missed that I would have liked to have attended.
Last December, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, I don't know how exactly we organize it. I'm thinking it, again, this Saul Alinsky movie said, well, you know, the tactics are brilliant. The error with that whole thing is that it's predicated on lies, but people respond much stronger to the truth. And I don't see why we can't get really aggressive with the truth. And if they jump into the meat grinder, so be it. Let's clog the meat grinder until judges get tired of hearing the truth and finally capitulate and rule on the law instead of their political agendas. Excuse my French, I'm sorry.
Okay, but Peter, I think that there's far better ways to do it than just send people in. You know, that's the...
Well, let's hear it. I'm just coming up with ideas.
I know. You know, to me, a movement has to have supportive people. The supportive people have to be, you know, engaged in, you know, there's political activities, there's media activities, but then there's also legal activities. And if you take a look at the civil rights movement, those three things were utilized in the civil rights movement. They had the support of a lot of people. The people were doing things politically. They were doing things media-wise, so to speak. They were having their protests. They were in the papers.
Getting attention.
You know, they were exercising the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. But then there was a legal strategy also involved. And in this movement, you know, we've had the gurus come around and say, you know, here, you know, I'm going to teach you how to do, you know, Right Way Law. Do you remember them?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
You know, they would go around the country, conduct these seminars, these $200 a weekend seminars. And, you know, you'd learn in the span of 8 hours, you know, they'd pat you on the back. They'd feed a bunch of stuff into people's head, pat them on the back and say, hey, now go out there. kind of wind up a whole bunch of people. And, you know, Irwin did this too.
Right.
Massively sending a whole bunch of people to court didn't accomplish anything. You know, okay, there are a lot of real important issues that can be raised in the legal arena. And that's one of the things that doesn't
happen. Let's talk about then that exact issue.
Well,
that,
you know,
that is, you're aware of this case. I just represented a guy in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. He had a tax court decision against him based on jurisdiction. What had happened was the Internal Revenue Service had failed to send out notices of deficiency, and he went to tax court and petitioned the tax court to dismiss, without prejudice against the IRS because of that. And the government argued jurisdiction, and we took it up on appeal based on the case in the decision in Piatanzo, which was absolutely on point, completely dispositive of the issue. And the I don't know if you've seen the.
Are you talking about notice of deficiency?
I'm talking about Cable case, K-A-B-E-L, in the Fifth Circuit.
Well, you said, I thought you said Pietanza.
Pietanza was the precedent upon which we relied. And it was dead on point. It was the exact same situation. There was almost no differences. And the court just said, we agree with the tax court. Jurisdiction should have been, is on the burden of the petitioner to prove, which completely ignored what we were arguing. I mean, they completely ignored the facts and the law and just recited some that had nothing to do with the case, except to say that that is normally true, but in this case it was not, and we had a dead-on case to explain why, and they knew we were right. So my question is this. You're suggesting we don't send people into the meat grinder, but we rely on the courts. So when we have courts that refuse to follow the law and make up law as they go, you yourself were sanctioned in the Ninth Circuit, and in their decision, they completely misquoted and butchered Brushaber.
Well, true.
Okay, so how do we...
Okay, Peter,
how do we rely on courts like that?
I will tell you, and this is a strategy that hadn't been used, okay? We have to take a strong field of law. Let's deal with the employment taxes. There's a history behind the employment taxes, and I've got it explained. You can see it on the screen. Click on employment taxes on that link. No, Joe, you don't have to do it, or you can go ahead and do it. Okay. But, you know, I carry an explanation of employment up to a certain point. And okay. I'm waiting for people to do some studying so that they at least get to a certain point. It's, I'm up to this point and I understand it. You know, what's the next step?
Well, they would be saying, I'm not a federal employee. What's the next step?
No, it's something completely different from that, Peter. You're out in left field on that. You know, once you understand who is subject to employment taxes, another legal principle comes into play. And what I'm saying is we got to take these strong fields of law where the case law, you know, like is overwhelmingly in one direction.
Okay.
Then you go out and you examine the federal income tax and find those areas where this overwhelmingly clear field of law is just, you can't refute it. And you take those principles and you use those to attack the problems you have with the income tax laws and regulations. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest to you that one field where you've got, you know, a lot of holes that can be attacked in the tax laws deals with the Administrative Procedures Act. And there's a lot there. But, you know, one of the things you cannot do, Peter, you can't, like on a public discussion group like this, lay it all out that, you know, anybody in the world can see.
Why not?
As we've just, within the last week, we've seen an example of this.
Yeah, tell me about that. I missed that one.
The president is in a controversy with the mullahs over in Iran. You know, they just shot down one of our drones. And Thursday, the president sitting there said, I'm getting ready to blow you guys up. And he said, no. But he's not going to tell anybody what he's going to do. And he says that repeatedly. And there's a lot of wisdom in taking that approach. And there's, you know, in this battle, too, there has to be some of that. And that's the reason why I'm of the view that people have got to, number one, come to, you know, avoid and stay away from the gurus out there, the people that are promoting, you know, Uniform Commercial Code, names and caps, you know, I'm a big follower of Fake Judge Anna, you know, those kind of wild and crazy and nasty people. They don't bring anything, they are inveterate liars. You know, Peter, you're talking about liars a minute ago. We've got a bunch of them in this movement.
Yeah, no shortage.
I'm suggesting.
And then there are fields of law that are overwhelmingly one way, and then they dictate a result that can't be denied. And that's the route I would like to take, but it's going to take some you know, first the movement's got to grow. It's got to become populated with people that are educated and people that are willing to do something more than, wow, man, I read this stuff. I agree with it. And now I'm going to hop up on the Patriot bandwagon and I'm along for the ride. Somebody else is going to pull this. And when I get into trouble, that somebody else is going to be the one that's going to bail me out of my problems. And it doesn't work that way.
Doesn't.
But Peter, I know, you know, you're here, you're talking about this. Apparently this was a recent Fifth Circuit appeal where the court just kind of gave you home cooking. Is that a description?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. In fact, Dick Stein.
That's a legal term. That's a legal process. Lawyers are well familiar with, familiar with.
Home cooking.
Home cooking.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on. And to address the problem of home cooking, you know, we have these gurus out here that, you know, they get home cooking and then they want to blame somebody else for that. They're completely unaware of, you know, what's going on in this legal arena.
In fact,
home cooking is a real problem. That's the reason why I'm saying, you know, there's too many situations in which ill-prepared people, you know, they get backed into a corner. Now I've got a strike with something. Well, the only thing they have backed themselves so far back up into the corner that they've only got a couple of rusty swords to use in the way of a defense.
Rubber knives.
We would have picked to begin with. But they're the only thing that's around that this party can have to defend himself is a rusty sword, or in reality, a rubber band. That approach, the ill-prepared approach, gets us nowhere.
Well, you know, if I could just chime in enough to say that, you know, the entire system, you know, as you think about, you know, like the Saul Alinsky example, you know, he organized radicals and he was a communist, he was a socialist, he had all these things, and he was going to destroy, he's going to take this country down, and did a pretty good job of it for quite a while.
Well, he was one of many, obviously. Joe McCarthy was completely right, although he had difficulty controlling his emotions, much like Alex Jones does. That doesn't make Alex wrong, just means he's kind of passionate about things, you know?
That's true. But, you know, but our situation is, you know, there's people in the movement, and we call it the movement, who study their butts off, researches, and says, you know, I would rather see people handle this administratively rather than judicially, you know, and let's think of a different way to approach this.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying when I say the meat grinder. I think that we know enough administratively to make the IRS really, really have difficulty maintaining its false facade. And if the people come through a truthful education, not a education, and they have a roadmap for how the game is played, mm-hmm. then it could really change things. It could, as Larry says, grow the size of the movement to the point where some of these other things that he dreams about would be right. But somehow we have to get from here to there. We have we have zero political power right now.
Yeah, no. And we shouldn't be complaining about this in terms of the people who are in attendance, because the people who are here are obviously interested in learning and trying to resolve this problem, even if they have problems. So, correct. You know, it's to, you know, to cry and scream and holler and poor me, we need to invite people. We need to say, hey, this is the real deal. Income tax is the tradition is much more stronger than the actual law. And, you know, taking it from the perspective of our generations, you know, my parents, you know, I'm 68 years old. But my parents were the first generation in the income tax. Baby boomer time comes along and you have, you know, the vast majority of the population of giving birth in just a short period of a few years. And well,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize.
But that's no problem. But, you know, my parents were the first generation. My generation is the second generation. My daughter's generation is the third generation. My granddaughter's generation is a fourth. We are three generations into the income tax as it sits today.
And yeah,
if we don't do anything about it, the fourth generation is going to be sucked through the hose. And I fear for the fact.
Think about this. We may have sitting before us a absolutely unique once in a millennia opportunity. I want you to think about this. We've got this juxtaposition between Donald Trump on the one hand, who is a miracle. I mean, I don't know anybody who voted for him in 2016 that didn't have some trepidation, you know, based on his bombacity and his TV personality and all that. But it was one of those situations where he was by leaps and bounds the lesser of two evils. There was no choice, right? And now he's turned out to be this absolutely fantastic president. I mean, God has done amazing things with this guy in spite of himself. I don't know. I don't want to judge that. But what I'm saying is, meanwhile, over here, we have all the Alinskyites, the deep state, the communists that have been working on us since McCarthy's time and earlier, right? And they are going ballistic and spinning every lie they can.
Doing it tonight.
Exactly. Exactly. And what's going to happen? See, what they don't understand is because they've got the left in the East Coast. They think that they're a majority just because they're the ones out parading and everything. And they really don't even know how big the United States is that lies between those two coasts. They don't know that when, 100,000 people turn out for a 20,000 seat rally at Trump's rally and Biden can't even fill, a tiny room. They have no idea the power of that population that's backing this president, not by his words, but by his deeds.
This is a movement.
I know, but let me finish.
This is the movement that goes back to Ron Paul.
Let me finish. Let me finish. The Democrats' lies and the media's lies are about to come crashing down upon them. And when they do, when that avalanche comes home to roost, that would be the best time for us to strike. Because at that point, all those minds that have been lied to and are finally realizing how badly they've been lied to, any one of them that's curious will be open to new information. I'm saying that's our opportunity. That's our window to launch this movement.
Okay. Can I make this observation?
I'm done. I'm sorry.
This growth in federal revenue enabled by the federal income tax, you got the Democrats there. All they want is power. They don't give a damn about the country or the people.
Absolutely
all they
true.
Want is power. Why do they want that power? Because this federal income tax brings in more revenue than you can shake a stick at.
And they want that revenue.
Absolute. There's corruption everywhere. So you've got just a corrupt system wanting more and more and more. They'll sell the country out. They'll destroy the country to get power. And they want to get the power so that they can get that gravy train that comes with corruption. Because this country has implemented too many planks of the Communist Manifesto. But Peter, you are absolutely correct that, the president said that this is a movement. To me, the movement he's talking about is the one that Ron Paul was the... Ron Paul jumped in front of this movement back in 2008. This movement still goes on. It's powerful. It stands for truth, justice, and the American way. We can make the tax movement a part of it. The tax movement is probably the father of the current movement. The money issue movement is the father of this current movement. I agree with you wholly, Peter. But what we've got to do is we got to keep on doing this every Wednesday night. We got to bring in more and more people. We got to get people educated about these issues. They got to understand. They got to leave the garbage alone. Don't listen to fake Judge Anna. Don't listen to, some of these other wild and crazy people out here. Learn the basics, learn the real stuff, And then once you learn the real stuff, then you can start putting on your thinking cap about how this movement can become effective.
I think we need a comic book. I think we need a comic book primer. Something where, you know, any kid of 12th grade education, which is really about half the population, some of them are 50, but they still only have a 12th grade education. They can pick up this comic book and it'll be like, you know, the income tax for dummies or the true, I don't care what you want to name it, but it's just got to be a primer that is truthful because that's what the other guys are selling. They're selling a kit. We have to have a kit and it's got to be right. And we can do that. Joe sort of has that with his story. And I think he's done a wonderful job of taking what his experience and putting it out there in a way that people can pick up his book, go to his website, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you know, Free Enterprise Society and Sean and Steve and you, we've all done websites. We've had big dreams. But I'm thinking we need something really, really simple that just cuts through the fog. It might not cut through the fog right now, but when that fog starts to lift and all those chickens are running around going, man, I just got my head cut off, we'll be there.
Hey, Joe, I've got some people asking questions on the chat. Are we going to address some chat stuff? Here it is at quarter after the hour.
There's a question about Dave Champion's book.
Yeah, it looks like we've got a lot on the chat, so kind of not sure where to begin or where to.
There's two I see on the screen. There's one from Star. I'd like to address that. She's asking, she wanted me to do it privately.
Well, okay.
But Dave Champion's book, Dave was familiar with these basic issues. He wrote a book about it. You know, he asked me to, he said, before he printed his book, he sent it to me to read. And I kind of thought it was kind of basic. But, you know, I don't have any criticism of Dave Champion's book, but, you know, there's a lot of areas that he didn't cover. So.
I read his book and I thought it was very good. I mean, there's, you know, in the history of the tax honesty movement that I've been involved with, there's really only a handful that I thought were, you know, pretty damn good. And his ranks up there. My problem with Dave, to be point blank, is that he's completely anti-Christian.
Yeah. And he's got a million tattoos on him right now.
Yeah, well, the tattoos, I don't know about that. But anyway, I am a Christian, so that means he's anti-me. And also, I've had personal experiences with him that if I disclosed what happened in public, would be perceived as defamatory. But, of course, defense is an absolute defense. I mean, truth is an absolute defense to defamation. But so I've had some personal experiences with me that made me choose not to associate with him further. That's what I say about his book. His book is very good, but Dave has kind of proved to me that he is not the kind of person I want to hang with. And if he wants to talk to me about that, I'm perfectly happy to do so.
Well, hey, can I address this question that Star asked about Bill Thornton? And
sure, you know, please.
Back in about 1985, Bill Vinson and I went out to L.A., and we were invited by Bill Thornton and his people to come over to his house to meet with him. And then we went over there, and we got in. They were into issues. We were into, at that stage, wanting to promote and educate people about the non-ratification of the 16th Amendment issue and other things. And we got over there involved in the crowd. It's kind of wild and what raising the wild and crazy crowd, and they were in the 14th Amendment issues and other issues. You know, I just, you know, personally knew that they were non-substantive. And since that time, you know, because, you know, Bill and I were there for a while and then we left. And to me, ever since that time, Bill Thornton's had a desire to carry on a battle that I think is irrelevant. I think Bill Thornton is involved in the promotion of some flaky arguments. And, you know, I avoid, there are a lot of people that promote flaky arguments and they come looking for fights too many times. And I've engaged in too many battles with a lot of these people. And, you know, I've learned to keep a safe distance, but boy, if they come around, they'll attack. I'll carry out a battle with them. And usually when I have a battle with them, they walk away. But Bill Thornton's somebody that I personally could care less about.
Were there any other chats, Larry, that you wanted to address?
No. Well, you know, here it is. We got 20 after, and I want to plop down in front of Fox and see what happened tonight.
Well,
but you know, we got a bunch of questions I think here that need to be probably covered next week. You know, we had this one question about Section 61. We've been over that before, but you know, we can, you know, Yahshua, there's somebody who's been with us from the very beginning, Yahshua.
That's right. Well, what we can do is I've saved the chats, and we did have a lively discussion that, you know, involved Peter, and weren't planning on it, but we love lively discussions and try to get people thinking about solutions. So
hello, can you hear me?
Sure.
Hi.
Did you want to ask a question?
Hi.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Oh, that would be awesome. So I ran across an article that just shocked me, and I was hoping Joe may know something about it, or one of you guys. The title is Congress Just Broke the U.S. Tax System with Their New Income Tax Law. And the new income tax law they're referring to is H.R. 1 that was effective January 1st, 2018, and has the immediate effect.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, caller. We'll have Larry respond. Thank you. Go ahead, Larry.
You know, the United States Constitution has the power of taxation, and in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, powers of tax. There's two great classes of taxes: direct and indirect taxes. Direct taxes have to be apportioned. Indirect taxes merely have to be uniform. Going up to in 1894, the United States Supreme Court was confronted with the validity of the 1894 income tax. The Supreme Court in that case held the income tax to be unconstitutional. That necessitated the 16th Amendment, which was allegedly ratified in 1913. And once the 16th Amendment was declared ratified on February 25th, your birthday, Joe, but years before, in 1913, by October 1913, we had the first income tax under the 16th Amendment. And, you know, when you're talking about the power to tax, you know, well, the real power to tax is found in Article 1, Section 8. That's where Congress gets its power to tax. But in reference to the income tax, you can also say, well, it also arises from the 16th Amendment. So it's a matter of semantics. Now, I think what this lady is talking about, and there's a, you know, Gary and I have Friday, we have a radio show on Liberty Works Radio Network, and the guy that has a Liberty Works Radio program on Thursdays at 5 o'clock Central Time, he's the one that's making this argument that, well, gee, you know, when you take a look at the bill itself, it says the basis for this income tax stuff is Article 1, Section 8, rather than the 16th Amendment. Now, am I correct in being able to identify what your problem is? The lady that was asking the question.
Actually, I muted her, Larry, because we have 30 people on the call, and if everybody are unmuting, we're going to have a problem.
Okay, well, I'll just continue. I think that that's what it is. I don't give any credence to, you know, there's no legal validity in the fact that, you know, the authors of a bill that gets passed by Congress say that it's based upon the original taxing clauses of the Constitution, that that's, quote, an abandonment of, you know, claim that it's based on the 16th Amendment. It doesn't, it's an insignificant, inconsequential, it's an effort to create a problem that isn't even there.
Gary, do you have any comment on that?
In Article 1, Section 8.
You know, actually, the way that I've have come to believe how this whole thing, I've stood back in the behind the line and just been an observer for many, many years. And I started weeding people out, and I would start characterizing it as, hey, somebody starts with a little grain of sand, and that little grain of sand becomes their big issue. And every single tax protester, every single guru, everybody that's ventured down this road has come up with a grain of sand, and that much of their research, their argument, their position is true, just a grain of sand. No one's really willing to say, I need to double check that. I want to fact check this. And instead of taking a position of an observer and don't take a stand until you get all the facts together. And so, and you know, and I've been saying this for years, and it's, you'll never run into a group more diverse than the tax movement, period. Right. You got some diverse characters, and then, but the, you know, and
well, I thought her question though was more that I thought she was asking if this new law that was became effective in January of 18, if that was superseding anything from the past. And I think to sum up what Larry said is the answer. Well, the short answer is no.
The authors of a bill, you know, can make statements about it. You know, only recently, let's see, when was it the court began to, you know, it's in one of these battles involving Trump, you know, somebody, you know, built one of these Trump haters in these Trump lawsuits made some argument. Oh, Trump made some statement long ago, you know, it has an effect upon, you know, what he's doing right now. I forgot the.
Something about
it was about the Muslim ban.
Okay, yeah. And the court just, you know, this is the same caliber. You know, the courts just do not use, except in very limited circumstances, you know, they delve into the comments and statements of the author of a bill, you know, only after they've gone, and once they create a, you know, they see an statutory ambiguity, and then they can consult certain sources, and then they can consult certain sources. Yeah, I mean, this is all laid out in cases, you know, how you, the authorities you look to determine the meaning of an ambiguous word.
Well, I think a
single statement of an author of a bill just doesn't mean much at all.
I think the point she was trying to get to, though, is that the only thing that it supersedes is whatever that law amended. The fundamentals of the tax have not changed since it was enacted in 1913 and then first ruled on by the Supreme Court. And right on up through the 20s, after FDR's court backing plan, the Supreme Court has avoided looking at the fundamentals, with that one exception of the Murphy case, which they then took out. Yeah, Marita Murphy, yeah. They took out of the, well, they took their original decision down, but I have copies of it.
I've got an opposite viewpoint to that. I can show you how Murphy is right.
No, I said, well, the final decision or the first one?
Hey, this is what I'm trying to get people to understand about what the true nature of income. And so here we have Yeshua constantly harping about 61, section 61, we need to talk about that next week. But I would like for you to, you know, take into consideration, really, I think the income, what income really is almost the exact opposite of what we think it is today. You ask most people about what income is, and their answer, income is really the exact opposite of what they say.
Well, gentlemen, probably because before long,
comes real close to being a gift.
Before long, Larry's going to say, hey, are we going to cut this off? Because I want to go watch Fox News. So why don't we wrap this up? I just wanted to thank the audience who largely remained muted. You might have been confused when our good friend Peter came on board.
I want Peter to come back next week.
Well, yeah. I'll wear a tie next week. I can see that I'm underdressed.
Well, Peter.
Or we can wear shorts.
Peter's definitely paid his dues in the movement, done a heck of a lot of work. And so he joined and started talking, and we welcomed him. So anyway, I appreciate the rest of the audience staying muted, because can you imagine if everybody started talking, it just wouldn't work. So we appreciate your patience and your understanding. And this has been a very lively production, and I think it's going to be great to tell your friends.
Hey Joe, next week let's get into this section 83. Hey Dave, Maryland's he's a good student, man. He's a scholar.
Well, very good. And I did.
We ought to get into it, and Mel Peter coming ought to join us.
Everybody, I did save the chats from this week, so next week we'll address some of the chat questions So we hope you'll join us next week, and let's see if we can double or triple our numbers. We do have around 30 very devoted audience members, and we appreciate that very much. One time quickly, you can go to startpage.com to see Larry's website. Type in Beecraft Briefs or Dixieland Law Journal. Don't forget Sean O'Connor's website, seanoconnor.org, or freeenterprisesocietyservices.org. Our good friend Gary can be reached by email directly. That's Gary, G-A-R-Y, at npn.net. That's Nancy, Paul Nancy, npn.net. I'm Joe Bannister, agentfortruth.com. And if there's any last comments from Peter or Larry or Gary, but otherwise we're going to sign off.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you to the audience also.
Fantastic. All right, everybody, we'll see you next week, and thanks for joining us. We'll try to make this livelier and livelier every week, and we count on your participation.
Invite your friends.
Yes. Thanks very much. We'll see you all next week.